Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Friday, November 4th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, I do believe we have a ninth straight day of losses for the S&P, unless they reverse it here the few minutes after the top of the hour when markets should close, and you would think the last numbers that come through should be final, but there's always a few ticks that come through of the numbers, and right now we're still looking at the S&P down about not much, 3.4 points, 2085. I mean, it's not a lot percentage-wise in losses in the past 9 days. It's, you know, it comes to probably, what, 2.5% thereabouts, if that much, a little over 2%. So not a big decline for 9 days, considering the amount of losses that we saw in 2008. Certainly a trend and not a very good one. Considering this is a historic nine day of losses. So let's go ahead and get to the markets. We'll talk about that here in just a little bit, but we have gold. It tried to sneak away this morning. And a lot of pressure on it. 250 right now, up 250 at 1305.70. The high for the day was 1307. So right now, 1305.70, up 2.5. Silver was negative most of the day, turned around, up 0.06, 1849. Platinum was up $2, made it over 1,000. That's a tremendous run for platinum, I think, also. Still not a bad buying opportunity, considering it's still, you know, $300 below gold, and normally it will sell for higher. The platinum price is usually higher than gold. So, you know, as long as you have that type of displacement, it's a good time to be buying some platinum if you already have your gold and silver. Palladium was up 7 today at 628. USDX today, just down minor 0.20, 96.95. Pressure is still on crude oil, down 0.59 at 44.07. And the paper markets today, the Dow was down 41 points, 17,888. The NASDAQ was down 12, 5,046. The S&P was down 3,085. 10-year yield, 1.78%. And the euro was up 0.25 at 111. European and Asian markets, of course, were down. Now, the extreme fear came back a little bit, up a whole 0.15 at the fear and greed index. So that is it in the markets today. And as I mentioned, we talked about this earlier in the week. I believe it was Wednesday. The S&P index had only recorded a 7-day losing streak on 3 separate occasions in the past 20 years. That was Wednesday. Yesterday there was 8, and now today there is 9. The index's longest ever run of losses was 8 days, matched at the height of the financial crisis in October of 2008. And at that point in time, the S&P started falling on Monday, September 29th, and closed lower every day until October 10th, and it was its worst week in history. So today marks the 9th day of losses for the S&P. So be interesting to see what we face next week if this trend continues to indicate
lower. What we're going to face next week is going to have something to do with an election, and we won't even notice. Price of gold could go up $1,000 next week, and a lot
Nobody
of us wouldn't
would
even
attention.
Notice.
Well,
we're going to find out who is going to. You would, but
I would. Our listeners would.
Mm-hmm. But just the same, there are going to be a lot of diversions.
Populace, yeah, the general populace out there wouldn't know. Today, of course, the U.S. jobs continued to rise in October. They had show wage gains also accelerated, and payrolls climbed by 161,000 last month, following a 191,000 gain in September. And of course, that was larger than previously estimated. Of course, it was. Jobless rate fell to 4.9%. while wages rose from a year earlier by the most since 2009. Now, it's one thing to have your wages rise, but it's something else to have disposable income. So just because wages rise doesn't mean that there's more disposable income out there. And you're not going to have more disposable income when you have health insurance policies that are rising 60%. I'll guarantee you wages did not rise 60% for most people in this country. So again, you know, it makes it sound all fine and dandy. Oh, goody, goody, people are paying more. The economy is greater. It really does come down to disposable income, folks. Workers have been in short supply for 13 straight months, and that's according to the Institute for Supply and Management. A survey of service industry companies, it makes up about 90% of the economy. Part-time workers and long-term jobless still higher than before the last recession. Among service providers, education and health services led with an increase of 52,000 jobs, followed by professional and businesses services at 43,000. Retailers, I thought this was interesting. Retailers, we're heading into the holiday season. They pared payrolls by 1,100 on declines at electronics and appliance stores and clothing shops. And factories reduced payrolls by 9,000 after an 8,000 decline the month before. And, of course, that's in line with the report earlier this week that showed manufacturing barely expanded in October. Government added 19,000 workers. Like, what the heck do they need to add 19,000 workers for? Oh, I know. It's the investigation into Hillary. They had to bring on more FBI guys. Anyway. So that was Alfred. You're awfully quiet.
Well, I thought I'd sit back. It's Friday. Kind of mellow out a little bit. Begin to enjoy the weekend an hour early.
There's no mellowing out in this program, Alfred.
Well, bond chief at $5 trillion investment behemoth BlackRock told us the most dangerous place to put your money. That's from Business Insider. It says the BlackRock firm has more than $5 trillion in assets under management. Rick Ryder is BlackRock's global chief investment officer of fixed income In a recent interview, he made a couple of comments. One of them was, the Fed will raise policy rates by a quarter point in December. That's no surprise. And then we'll likely move twice more by the end of next year, barring some unexpected shock. Bond markets have largely priced in that kind of gradual rise in the rates. So this is a wonderful prediction. He's saying the next year, it'll go up in December. Yeah, everybody figures that, 80% or more figure it's going to go up in December. And then he says, then likely move twice more by the end of next year, barring some unexpected shock. Anyone think we can get through next year without an unexpected shock? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, what is the point of making a prediction? Say, it's like saying, I predict that men will land on the moon unless the earth blows up or something next year. I mean, this, there's just something so foolish about this. Oh, we're going to rise twice more. The interest rate will jump twice more next year, barring some unexpected shock. That's not a prediction. It's just silly to me. One area of the markets that isn't receiving enough thoughtful consideration is the perversity of excessive financial asset valuations, the monetary policy backdrop that made it possible. He's talking about excessive financial asset valuations. He's saying that financial assets are overpriced. What do we mean by financial assets? Investopedia says a financial asset is defined as a tangible liquid asset that derives value because of a contractual claim of what it represents. Okay? You've got a piece of paper is what we're talking about. A tangible liquid asset that derives value. It doesn't have a value, intrinsic value. It derives value because of a contractual claim of what it represents. It represents something. It isn't something. It represents something. That's what a financial asset is. Stocks, bonds, bank deposits, and the like are all examples of financial assets. Unlike land, property, commodities, or other tangible physical assets, financial assets do not necessarily have physical worth. They're telling us that these financial assets have no intrinsic value. What does that mean? They are paper debt instruments. When we're talking about financial assets, we're talking about paper debt instruments. We are talking about promises to pay rather than payments. A payment is something tangible like gold or silver or a house or a car. All right? That's a payment if you own it. All right? If you have a piece of paper, you only have a promise to pay. And this man is warning, he's in charge, or part of the people who are in charge of $5 trillion, he's warning we have excessive valuation for financial assets, which are these paper promises to pay. He says, thus, in broad strokes, a financial asset is a paper debt instrument. This is my comment. Mr. Ryder is warning that the world's paper debt instruments, stocks, bonds, bank deposits, are overvalued due to a significant price and due for a significant price decline and should therefore be avoided. Insofar as these financial assets are distinguished from tangible physical assets, Mr. Ryder implicitly recommends that you invest in tangible physical assets like land, tools, gold, or silver rather than paper debt instruments. That's the advice that we've been passing out on this program for 5 years.
Longer.
Yeah. It's because you are more mature than I am.
You joined the program, but I mean, we've been around for, you know, a lot longer than 5 years. But, you know, it is important that people understand, you know, it is something that happens, whether it's 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, those 40, 50. Once they started the fiat currency debacle, here we are today. And it will continue. We know history. We know how this is going to end. And it isn't going to end nicely. It isn't going to end nicely with companies getting or investors getting their quarterly statements and saying, oh, it's down a little bit. Oh, it's up a little bit. You're going to be getting your quarterly statements that say zero, you know, or close to zero. Or, you have to prove to us what you have, because we've lost everything.
Well, you're not going to have anything if all you have is paper.
You will be going into litigation. So
go ahead and litigate. What will you get? Will you get? You have more debt out there than you have assets to back it up. All right, you can sue for, I've got a dollar, I've got a gold coin, and you can sue to have it, and 520 or 252 other people can sue to get the gold coin. Well, all that's going to do is perhaps make the attorneys rich, but there's only one gold coin, at least on comics and LIBOR, for every paper claim. It's not the same, it's not that bad for other investments and commodities, but there are rumors and stories that even stocks are being sold in multiples. Multiple copies of the same stock are being allegedly sold. Some people have made that claim, don't know if it's true, but point is, this whole thing is a racket. It's a house of cards, and when it comes down, you know, the most you can pick up, expect to get a card. It won't have any value worth mentioning. This article we're talking about, Mr. Ryder, again, over one of the honchos at BlackRock, he continues, said, in fact, investors seeking to allocate capital are faced with a conundrum today as artificially distorted risk-free rates. What's he mean by that, Melody? Risk-free rates. He means bond interest rates. Risk-free. Bonds are supposed to be risk-free. And artificially distorted, how are they artificially distorted? They've been artificially distorted by the Federal Reserve holding interest rates at an unreasonably low, near zero level. All right? So he says artificially distorted risk-free rates are not only suppressing yield levels, and you can't make much money off your investments in paper debt instruments, but are allowing for a lot of misguided capital allocation decisions at different levels of the economy. It's because you can't get a fair return on your money when you invest it in bonds and perhaps in stocks that people are looking for things that are bizarre. They are going in places where they shouldn't go out of desperation. He says that is likely to hold negative consequences longer term, and it probably at least results in subpar future growth and muted returns. He's just saying, look, you're not going to make any money off these paper debt instruments. That's one of the things he's saying. And a lot of investments are going to be, they're not going to be very profitable. He goes on, he says the combination of excessively low interest rates set by the Federal Reserve and large aging global demographic, it means there's a growing number of elderly people in this, not just in this country, but in the world, has produced a massive scramble for income globally. What's he mean by a massive scramble? He means a massive demand for income off of investments globally. Such high levels of demand drive debt market valuations to extremes, leaving little room for error, especially in the longer dated maturities. People are doing crazy things, taking more risk. There's less room for error, particularly if you are investing in things in long term, for example, 30-year bond. He's saying, look, this is dangerous stuff. You better be careful. In this environment, small moves in yields will result in big price adjustments in long-dated fixed income, potentially resulting in significant losses in investors' portfolios. If you're investing in long-term bonds, he's saying you are in danger. For this reason, we have a much higher conviction in holding short intermediate maturity rates over the coming quarters as the longer end of the curve is likely to back up to levels more reflective of fundamentals. What's that mean in English? It means that he's willing to hold short-term bonds. He might hold those, but he regards long-term bonds as too fragile, too unstable to be regarded as anything but dangerous. All right? Well, it's not necessarily big news to hear this guy from BlackRock telling us that you better watch out for long-term bonds in particular, but he's also telling us to watch out for paper assets in general. He didn't use the term paper assets, but he did say financial assets. And when you're talking financial assets, you are almost necessarily speaking of a paper debt instrument. And he's saying they're overvalued. You better watch out. You better be careful. And we've been telling you the same thing. And if you're sensible, you'll get into something tangible. You could put it in guns. You could put it in tools. You could put it in land, but they're not highly liquid. If you want something tangible and liquid that is easily spent, exchanged, whatever, you're looking for gold or silver. We'll take a break for some commercials, and Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Many, many people have experienced the benefits of drinking all-natural Life Change tea. The unique blend of 8 herbs helps detoxify your body so you can live a healthier life. Numerous testimonies have been given about the benefits of drinking Life Change tea. So, are you drinking Life Change tea? Interested? Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Many are so impressed with our product, they order a year's supply. And why not? When they do, they receive 2 months free. That's a $70 savings. The body is meant to heal itself. Sometimes the body just needs a little help. Get the tea at GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Or call us at 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. This is not an ordinary green tea, and it's not available in stores. This tea helps with digestive problems, acid reflux, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and as talk show host Jerry Doyle says, it'll make you as regular as a baby bird. Enjoy your life. Get Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com.
Talking away. No, I don't know what to say.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisker with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
I have a little package here. We don't have many of these packages, so you should call right away. Very often do I offer the American Gold Buffalo. This is 1 ounce. They're very beautiful. 2016s. A bullion coin. And this package also includes 20 of the brilliant uncirculated peace dollars. This also includes your shipping costs, and the total package is $1,905. That's $1,905. You're getting the Buffalo just slightly above my wholesale costs, and of course those are great prices for the brilliant uncirculated peace dollars. $1,905, that includes your shipping costs. Give us a call at Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
We're just talking about BlackRock, which is a firm that manages $5 trillion. They ought to know a little about what they're talking about. You would think they'd know something about what they're talking about when it comes to dealing with money. Here's an article from Ms. Shedlock as his Global Economic Trend Analysis newsletter, and it says the headline is $50 trillion sideline cash conundrum. Now, he says there's been a lot of discussion about how much cash investors are holding these days. BlackRock, again, they're managing $5 trillion of their own. They put the figure of this cash that's been held on the sidelines at $50 trillion, a figure that includes a host of different metrics from central bank assets to financial firm reserves and consumer savings accounts. Now, the reason this is significant is some people are looking at this, and BlackRock's not the only one, that there's a lot of money sitting on the sidelines, and they're saying this money could jump in at any time. It could jump into the stock market, or it could jump into the gold market, or silver, or whatever. And then it would make prices go spectacularly upward. But Ms. Shedlock, he makes a very interesting point. He says, look, money can't flow into stocks or bonds and disappear. If there's a $50 trillion in sideline cash, and it was used to purchase, say, stocks, would that make the price of stocks go up? Well, it might to some degree, but its overall effect on the economy would be negligible. Because supposing Melody had $50 trillion worth of stock, and I had $50 trillion worth of cash that's sitting on the sidelines, all right, unused. If I use my $50 trillion in cash to buy Melody's $50 trillion in stocks, what's changed? The only thing that's changed is I own the stock now instead of Melody. Which now, while I own the stock instead of Melody, Melody owns the $50 trillion in cash instead of me. The point I'm trying to make, and that Shedlock is trying to make, is that this idea that we'll just throw all this cash into the market and all of a sudden things are going to jump is a little bit, it's not that simple, it's not that reasonable, because the cash doesn't disappear. All we've done is we've taken $50 trillion of sideline cash that I have. I buy stock from Melody, and now Melody has $50 trillion in sideline cash. Sideline cash is a function of federal printing, Federal Reserve printing, and the ability of banks to borrow money into existence. We've got, it's true that there's $50 trillion, or at least it's reasonable to suppose. It's not irrational to suppose there's $50 trillion sitting out there that's not being used, but of course it's out there. It's like the money in your wallet. You've got money. You've got some savings, right? The fact that you have those green pieces of paper doesn't mean that you're going to spend them suddenly tomorrow and the markets are going to jump and everything else and your sideline cash will disappear. Sideline cash can't disappear. If there's $50 trillion in cash, the only way it can disappear is if someone sets a torch to it and burns it. Other than that, this concern about sideline cash is to some degree irrational and unreasonable, and we're not going to see a sudden plunge into the stock markets or a sudden plunge into the gold market from $50 trillion in sideline cash. But it's still something of a mystery. All right, it's still something strange about this. There is $50 trillion sitting around. What should be done with it? If we don't just invest it in stock, or we don't just invest it in gold, what should be done with that $50 trillion? It should be invested in something that produced more money.
$50 trillion seems like an awful lot.
Sure does.
You know, so, but I mean, it's not any different. I mean, these multinational corporations have been buying up their own shares, so they've been going into debt, and they have been sidelining their cash. Because they're borrowing, so a lot of that cash is going to be going back to pay off those debts.
The fact that the cash is sitting there, there are articles saying this is like
$50 trillion
sitting under an avalanche of cash.
If the $50 trillion is a true number,
I understand. It might be only $20 trillion. We don't know what the number is. Some people who have reason to know, they have estimates that might be credible. Again, BlackRock, they manage $5 trillion. They say there's $50 trillion in sideline cash. Okay, maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But the point is, and Ms. Shedlock, it's an interesting point. You can't just make that disappear. It's not as if we'll just take this cash out of the sideline and we'll put it into stocks. What'll happen is if you buy $50 trillion worth of stocks, somebody's going to get the $50 trillion, and we still have $50 trillion in sideline cash. And we are left to wonder, what can we do with it? I mean, is it even, does it even exist in a sense that's real and significant? I mean, it's a strange situation. It's a strange observation, insight, whatever, to say, yeah, there's $50 trillion in sideline cash. All right, so what? You know, I might have $1,000 in my wallet. So what? If I spend it, the market isn't going to move. Somebody else will have the $1,000. At least the market's not going to move significantly. And part of the reason I bring this up is it's just another one of those items of evidence that we live in a world that is strange. I mean, some of this stuff, there should be an easy answer to this sideline cash. And it should be something that BlackRock, for example, managing $5 trillion, they ought to know what's going on. They ought to be able to, well, this is what's going on with sideline cash, and here's how we can use it or deal with it or whatever. They should know this. This shouldn't be a mystery, and yet it is. And I think the reason for that, I'm going to conclude that the reason for this, at least primary reason, is that we are dealing with a monetary system that is unreal, unnatural, a debt-based monetary system rather than an asset-based monetary system. And all of a sudden, you turn the whole idea of economics on its head, and you wind up with crazy ideas like $50 trillion in sideline cash or negative interest rates. It's all crazy, but it's a reflection of the insanity that begins when you say, I know, why don't we have a debt-based monetary system? This will be so cool. Everybody's going to love it. It'll work out great. No, it won't. It'll lead us to disaster. And some of the bizarre ideas we see along the way, well, that's just signposts. You know, it's like being in the Twilight Zone with Rod Serling. We're coming to an interesting story before this is all over. Here's another evidence of this is another kind of insanity that we see in the world. Here's an article from the AFP, which is the French news media, news outlet that's similar to the Associated Press in the United States. And the headline is, Swiss police detain imam over call to kill Muslims. Imam being an imam, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but a Muslim priest, essentially, the guy who's running the mosque. Right? Swiss police arrested an imam at a controversial mosque near Zurich, Switzerland, on Wednesday after he allegedly urged followers to kill fellow Muslims who refused to join communal prayer. The imam at the Anur de Winterhauer Mosque, who is an Ethiopian national, had been detained for incitement to violence. During an October 21st sermon, the imam called for the assassination of Muslims who refused to participate in communal prayers of the mosque. Swiss media have reported frequently on the An-Nur Mosque, including suggestions that it has played a part in radicalizing young Muslims. According to the news site 20minsia.ch, the Ethiopian cleric started working at the mosque recently, replacing a predecessor who had been forced to leave amid accusations that he was preaching extremism. So they got rid of somebody who was preaching extremism and recruited a new Muslim cleric who preaches killing fellow Muslims. And it's one of the things you look at and just kind of shake your head, or I do at least, but it apparently is the nice thing about the religion of peace. You can kill anyone who disagrees with you. Jews disagree, kill them. Christians disagree, kill them. Muslims disagree, kill them too. I don't know, you know, there is something about the Muslim faith that is bizarre. And it is not something you can simply sit back and tolerate in the sense, well, welcome to our country, we have freedom of religion. Yeah, they'll take advantage of that freedom of religion, but they will not provide any freedom of religion for you. Their idea is you need to be converted into a Muslim, whether you like it or not. If you're not willing to convert, off with your head. That can't be tolerated, right? This is not a good thing. We can't just bring in more Muslims and more Muslims until this country becomes Muslim. I mean, we've seen it happen to some degree, or we're watching it happen to some degree in Europe. And this is not, there will be no assimilation. This is not going to be, well, we'll bring them down here and we'll get them a flat screen TV and a convertible and get their wives a boob job and they'll be Americans. No, they're not. There's going to be a problem here, and this country is crazy to bring the Muslims in. And I've talked about this before, but there have been two studies in Europe, one in Norway, one in England, by recollection, where they there's a problem that's biological in the Muslim faith. And what the researchers calculated was the genetic impact of marrying your first cousins over a period of several centuries.
Yeah,
and the result is there is a genetic defect in many of the people that are associated with the Muslim faith. You can't keep marrying your first cousins, and they do that because that's what Muhammad did. He married his first cousin. They want to emulate Muhammad. They have, in doing so for centuries, they have created problems where they have trouble seeing at night. They're more prone to mental illness, more prone to birth defects, more prone to disease. And I think some of this stuff indicates that they're just not hitting on all eight cylinders. They have
I can argue that about a lot of people in today's world. There's a lot of people that aren't working on the eight cylinders.
I understand, but the fact that they may not be working on eight cylinders, but it doesn't. But there's a difference in a genetic predisposition to trouble.
Well,
right? If you have done something that's genetically stupid for centuries, you are likely impaired genetically in a way that will not be easily corrected, right, and may not ever be corrected. And it raises doubt about, for those who believe in the Muslim faith, I mean, if Allah is God, why did he let his people, why did he let the Muslims damage themselves genetically over the past several centuries? It casts doubt on the validity of the Muslim faith. What else, Melody?
I don't know. We got about a couple more minutes to go before the break. I know Paris is having a lot of problems. I haven't been following, but there's been a lot of rioting going on as their, you know, migrants are being cleared out of certain areas. They've been demolished, and there are all kinds of things going on happening in Paris, and it really is a sad situation, and you're certainly going to see that pop up. And I think this is a story that's sort of being ignored. No one is talking about it, and
what's the lesson of the story?
Well, I mean, I think we all know what the lesson of the story is, and so but it's certainly a story.
The lesson is you got to be crazy to let these Muslims come in your country. And I'm not saying that to disrespect Muslims per se. I'm just saying they will not assimilate. They will not assimilate. They may go along with the program for a while, but when they're in the majority, you will assimilate into the Muslim faith or you will lose your head. And what Francis thought, they said, oh, sure, we're all going to sing Kumbaya. We'll all get along just fine. Well, it's not working out for France. And it's not working out for other nations in Europe who have decided that they would just, there's no problem, just bring them on in and we'll all be pals. It isn't going to happen. And you can learn from that lesson or you can ignore the lesson. If you learn from it, somebody's got to say, we don't need any more Muslims coming into this country. Or if we do, we're going to have to restrict their immigration dramatically and make sure that they are not genetically impaired.
Well, I don't know if you could test for that, but maybe you can, but it's not going to happen. But I think if Trump at least gets elected, and certainly he's going to have in place a stronger vetting for those that come into this country. Now, whether he can get that done or not still remains to be seen. So I think he will certainly push for stronger, you know, immigration, and certainly he has the support of ICE and so forth, but it still remains to be seen. There's still, you know, a lot of that other power up there, and we'll see.
He
can get a lot done.
One of the points, the argument I'm advancing, is that you don't have to restrict people. Well, you don't have to restrict people because they're Muslims, but you do have to restrict them if they are genetically impaired. It becomes a health issue. Not a freedom of religion issue, a health issue. Who's going to pay for these people when they have an unusual degree of medical problems? Who's going to pay for the children that are born deformed, whatever? I guarantee you what the plan is. It's for people who live in this country to pick up the white man's burden, figuratively speaking, and pay for them. And it won't be fun. All right, it won't be something you can absorb.
Well, I think
it
that's
won't be
the
something
least
you can afford, and you
right
can't
now
hide. Well, it may be the least of our problems. Our next problem is that the commercials start in about 5 seconds. So Melody and I will be back in a moment. You stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, we were just talking during the break. Italy, Turin's Italy. Currently, they have their food markets. They have customers browsing beef, salami. But the mayor, the new mayor of the populist five-star movement, announced plans to make Turin, Italy's first vegetarian city. The exact details of the five-year plan have yet to be fleshed out, but the city is expected to set up educational projects in schools to teach students about animal welfare, nutrition. There are also plans to create a vegetarian map for the city for tourists and introduce weekly meat-free day. Just thought that was kind of interesting. Whether it happens or not, I can't imagine. There's too many Italians over there that they do like their beef. So I can't.
They like
imagine
their sausage. They like their pork. The rest of that sort of thing. They like their pepperoni. He's going to have pure vegetarian pepperoni or pieces over there.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't think this is going to go well with the local populace. They might like it. It may attract vegetarians from around the world to visit Turin.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they do, and make some more money off of this. But I'll bet you that they'll be cooking their pork sausage in the back room. There'll be a black market. There'll be people that are smuggling sausage into Turin as if it were drugs. Black market. So you can get yourself some beef, some pork, maybe even some fish on the black market. So,
but they did vote him in, so perhaps there's more of a need for a veg city, the vegan city, a vegan city. This morning, it was interesting, this is pretty much on the back news, not a lot of discussions about it, but CBS learned that about a potential terror threat for the day before the elections. Sources told a senior investigative producer, Pat Milton, that the U.S. intelligence had alerted Joint Terrorism Task Force that now it's Al-Qaeda. I don't know what happened to ISIS. Oh, that's right. We're bombing them to death over there. So it can't be ISIS because we're winning the war with ISIS. So we're going to have to go back to Al-Qaeda. Could be planning attacks in three states for Monday.
Monday?
Monday.
Which states?
For the election. Virginia, New York, and I lost my screen. So it was New York, Texas, Virginia are all possible. Texas, yeah.
Well, I'm down in here in Texas. I'll have to keep my eyes peeled if I see anybody wearing a turban.
But they are
I'll
taking
be careful
it. Well,
on
they're
Monday.
Not. Yeah, but the authorities are taking the threat seriously. Though the sources stress the intelligence is still being assessed and its credibility hasn't been confirmed. Counterterrorism officials were alerted to the threat. While we do not comment on intelligence matters, we will say the counterterrorism and homeland security communities remain vigilant. Doesn't that make everyone feel much better? But the public should expect to continue to observe an increased law enforcement and security presence across communities and public places. Law enforcement community also continues to take action against those who attempt to engage in activities that would put Americans at risk. And of course, they're talking about the elections. Some of these voting places, there are more than 100 joint terrorism task forces at work across the country that in partnership with the state and local law enforcements. New York Police Department said it was working with intelligence agencies with a joint terrorism task force, and it goes on and on and on. Earlier this week, an alert warned local police of polling places being seen as attractive targets for lone wolf-type attacks by individuals motivated by violent extreme. This is what I read this earlier today, and I thought of you, Al. Not by any association, but I don't know why I thought. Well, you'll know in a moment why I thought. Earlier this week, an alert warned local police of polling places being seen as attractive targets for lone wolf-type attacks by individuals motivated by violent extremist ideologies, sovereign citizen, or other extremist activity. Now, how do they gather up these? Just because, I mean, where's Black Lives Matters in there? Oh, I'm sorry, they're probably under the extremist ideologist, maybe, maybe not. But, you know, they just focus on one sector, the conservative right-wing group, point them out as, you know, terrorists or, you know, homegrown and so forth. And
they are enemies of the state. That's what it comes down to. The state understands that perhaps better than the people on the right-wing conservatives do.
Yeah.
I mean, there is what the right-wing conservatives are ultimately doing. I mean, the left-wing doesn't challenge the government. They want bigger government. They want more handouts. They want more freebies and the rest of that sort of thing. They do not really challenge government. It's the right-wing that says, hey, we have too much government. We need less government, and we are, and the people in that right wing, at that right wing end of the political spectrum, they are looking for legal arguments and bases to hold government at bay. Right? And some people say, "Oh, that's a terrorist." Well, yeah, it is a terrorist from the government's perspective. It's a terrorist from the perspective of Hillary Clinton. Says these people are crazy. They're trying to make less government in this country. There's something wrong with those people. No, they're not. Those are the people that are most like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, whatever. The people that created this country. I mean, from the British perspective, they were our founding, our forefathers. They were terrorists. King George of England. Oh my God, these people are terrorists. They may not have had the word at the time, the word terrorist. They may have not have had it back in 1700s. But that was essentially what the government was worried about. And they would denigrate their adversaries any way they can. And they're doing the same thing in our government right now. They're worried about sovereign citizens. The Locke, the case Chisholm versus Georgia was decided in 1793 by the Supreme Court of the United States. And in that case, the Supreme Court says that the people of the United States of America are sovereigns, plural, without subjects. You're a sovereign, I'm a sovereign, everybody listening to this program is a sovereign, all of the people in the country are sovereigns, and they are sovereigns by virtue of the fact that they have received their rights from God. How do we know that? Read the Declaration of Independence, second sentence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. All right? For our country started with the premise that everyone gets their rights from God. Today, that doesn't seem like a remarkable premise. It doesn't sound particularly astonishing. It's a people here and there, so what? So what? Prior to this country, there was only one sovereign in England. There was only one sovereign in France. There was only one sovereign in Germany and Italy and the nations of the Holy Roman Empire. One sovereign. He was the king. He had divine right of kings. He received his rights from God in a ceremony at a church. He went through a coronation ceremony. All right? All the rest were subjects because they did not get their rights from God. He was the only man or woman, if it was a queen, who received her rights from God. All else were subjects because they did not. Our country started out with a premise that no, everybody gets their rights from God. And when they did that, everyone was a sovereign. Now, with that understanding has been overlooked, it's been forgotten, but it was the foundation that started this country off. And to my mind, it is the foundation for American exceptionalism. The government wants no part of it because if the people are sovereigns without subjects, the government is not their master. The government serves the sovereign or serves the sovereigns. It's always the way political structures are set up. The government serves the sovereign. The government serves the sovereigns. The government doesn't want to serve the sovereigns. So they say these people are terrorists. Oh my gosh, they're practicing, they are advocating ideas that are similar to those on which this nation was based. And they are terrorists, and don't listen to a thing they say. There is a war going on, and it's not just political, it's spiritual. At bottom, this goes to who did you get your rights from? Did you get your rights from God? Then you're a sovereign. Got your rights from the government? You're a subject. Government doesn't want to face this threat from the sovereigns, the alleged sovereign citizens. They don't want that knowledge to propagate. They don't want people to understand. It's the basis that makes the difference between whether the government can kick you around or whether you can tell the government what to do. Who's the master? We the people or the government? And government doesn't want to be the servant. They don't want to be the public servant. They want to be the master. And therefore, they go after anybody who's raising the sovereignty issue, they become a target. Oh. And if it sounds improbable, I've been sued by the Attorney General of Texas for $25,000 a day for the manufacture and distribution of a controlled substance. I was added to a suit that started in 2001. I was the seventh defendant. I was added in 2006 because I was fiduciary for a trust at least a couple of computers, tables, and chairs to a corporation that manufactured colloidal silver. Threatened with fines of $25,000 a day, $9 million a year. All right? I read the relevant definitions of drugs at both the Texas level and federal level, and they both include the phrase man or other animals. They include it twice. Man or other animals. Not man or animals, man or other animals. If I say a horse or other animals, makes perfect sense. We know that the generic class animals includes a bunch of things, and horses is one that falls in that class. A horse or other animals makes sense. A dog or other animals makes perfect sense. A rock or other animals, that doesn't make sense. A rock is not part of that class that we call animals. when they said man or other animals, and they said it twice, and it is still true. They've changed the law in Texas since our lawsuit. They've changed the definition in Texas, but the federal definition at Title 21, Section 321, maybe subsection G, if I recall correctly. They still say man or other animals, and they've been doing it since the 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act. What's this mean? It means the government looks at you as livestock. We have argued for years, I mean, people have been sensitive to these ideas, have argued for years that the government is, they think they're keeping us on the global plantation. And we thought we were just joking. We thought it was just, you know, well, they don't really think that. That was just an analogy, a metaphor, all right? But no, they do. And it's in the law. The definition of drugs, the definition of food, includes the phrase man or other animals. Why? Because if you're an animal, you have no claim on the unalienable rights that are declared to be self-evident in our Declaration of Independence. God didn't give any unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Didn't give that to animals. Only gave it to men and women made in God's image as per Genesis 1, 26 through 28. There is a spiritual war going on between the people of this country and the government. And the government is not the good guys. Our whole war on drugs is based on the presumption that the people are animals. The American medicine is based on the presumption that the people are animals. The billions of dollars of pharmaceuticals are based on the presumption that the people are animals, again, because drugs are defined in terms of man or other animals. Our prison population, 70% of the people in the federal penitentiaries are there based on the presumption that the people are nothing but livestock and animals and therefore have no meaningful rights. The only reason government puts up with any of us right now is because we have guns. They see us as animals. But we're a particularly dangerous kind of animal because we have firearms. That means government has to be careful. It's not like going after a lion or a tiger or an elephant or a moose or something. You can shoot them at long range and it's no problem. Sometimes these animals shoot back and government says, oops, we better watch our step. But we are living in an extraordinary time. And the government is increasingly defensive, increasingly aggressive, increasingly unstable. And what are we going to do about it? I don't know. Some of us will live through it, and some of us may not. But we are in some extraordinary times, and what should we do? Well, one of the things we should do is we should all get prepared as best we can. And if you agree with what I'm, with the essence of my argument, that we're involved in spiritual warfare, not just, this isn't just secular issues between the liberals and the conservatives or something. They have nothing to do with it. That's no big thing. That's trivial. This is spiritual warfare. Now, how are you going to conduct yourself in the midst of that? That's a choice you're going to have to, this is a question you're going to have to answer for yourself and a choice you'll have to make for yourself. But we are engaged in spiritual warfare, and it's the sort of thing you look at it and you see it growing, and it's hard to look at it and say, you know, we're not in end times. No, this couldn't be end times. That's just crazy talk. It can't possibly be end times. Well, I don't know if we're at end times. I don't know. But there's more than a little evidence to suggest that, yeah, maybe that's what's going on. And if it is, you know, get ready as best you can, and first order of business probably is to get right with the good Lord. And then after that, do what you can to protect yourself and hope and pray for the best. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Melody and I will be back on Monday. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.